Week three, you were tuned in to the Aquarium Drunkard Transmissions podcast. My name is Justin Gage here in Los Angeles, joined by Jason P. Woodbury in the Sonoran Desert. And yes, this is the third week of our now augmented podcast format.
Yeah, so we're doing things weekly for you guys because we understand that it's nice to have stuff to listen to right now as we're all trying to figure out what to do with ourselves. But on that front, we've got some cool news about a project that Justin has launched, Radio Free Aquarium Drunkard. Justin, you started a pirate radio station. What's going on? You were bored?
I did. It only took a global pandemic to get me off my ass to do this. But yes, as of Friday, I launched Radio Free Aquarium Drunkard, an online pirate radio station, which you can listen to at Aquarium Drunkard. Or you can listen to through your iTunes, and if you have Sonos, you can also listen to it that way, which I believe you've been doing, Jason.
Yeah, I set it up today, and all throughout work, I was listening to the mix you had going. I think, did you say was it on Saturday that you DJed for something like 12 hours straight?
Yeah, Saturday was, yeah, that was a long stretch. It was fun. It was kind of therapeutic. But yeah, I've been DJing. We're going to have lots of guest DJs, including yourself. I believe your first show is what, Wednesday night?
That's right, Wednesday at 8 p.m. PST, starting a thing called Range and Basin, which was, that was what my first Aquarium Drunkard mix was called. So actually, now that I think about it, I think it was my second mix, but still, it's a better name than the other name. So let's say it's the first for the myth, print the myth, I guess.
So it, again, Radio Free Aquarium Drunkard, all AD selects, lots of rare recordings, lots of guests from around the globe. Yeah, it's going to be evolving pretty quickly.
As for this week and this episode, we've got a talk here with Patterson Hood of the Drive-By Truckers. Since the mid-90s, the Truckers have been chronicling American sorrows and triumphs via their mix of country, soul, and rock and roll. They're led by two songwriters, Mike Cooley and Patterson Hood, and they recently released their 12th album, The Unraveling. Justin, I have to imagine, coming from the South, coming from Athens, Drive-By Truckers, you probably heard them pretty early on, right?
I did, so I graduated from the University of Georgia in Athens in 1999, and that was the beginning, around the beginning of their career. They had a couple albums out, and I would see them play around Athens and Atlanta. I guess it was when Southern Rock Opera came out, which I think is three albums in, that I got fully on board.
Well, their new record is called The Unraveling, and it's... I asked Patterson if he knew something we didn't know, you know. That's a pretty prescient album title. But it's a record about, you know, reckoning and reckoning with the kind of weird reality that we live in. It made sense and made me very eager to hop on the phone with Patterson. He's quarantining with his family in Portland, Oregon. And we hopped on the phone to discuss the new record, that new Bob Dylan epic, and Life in Modern America. So without further ado, we'll head over to my admittedly lo-fi phone conversation with Patterson Hood, and we'll see you on the other side.
So I take it you're in Portland now. That's where you're hunkered down at.
Yeah. I've been here. I'm on day 16, maybe 15 or 16 for me, and of the quarantine. So it's been crazy. We were supposed to have been in L.A. last night, and our L.A. show of our tour was supposed to have been last night. But now it's going to be in August, I hope. And, you know, we just don't know. But I'm hoping for the best.
Well, what's the scene like there? What are you up to at your house with your family?
We've got like a 100-year-old house we've been renovating for 4 years. And we built this addition, and we had just started kind of getting moved into it when this all happened. So we're kind of lucky that we're in a lot better shape than we would have been had this happened a month earlier, even as far as that goes. And I mean, like, we didn't have a kitchen in our house for 4 years, I'll put it that way. So we had kind of a makeshift kitchen in our and what's going to be the laundry room with like a hot plate and a little bitty refrigerator. I mean, it would have been a nightmare, you know. And so at least now, although our kitchen's far from finished, it doesn't have a sink yet, but at least it has a stove and a good sized refrigerator, and we, you know, still have the sink in the laundry room, which is like kind of the next room from the kitchen. So it's a work in progress, but I have an office, and so which I haven't had in 4 years, and so it's up in the attic over our master bedroom, which is part of the addition we built. And so it's really cool up here. It's really remote, and it gives me a place to go and get away and to work on writing, which I haven't had a place to do that for 4 years. And so that's, I mean, you know, I wrote the last two albums. I wrote my part of the last two albums literally like in the living room with, like, you know, kids climbing on me and stuff like that. So to have a place I can go and even lock the door occasionally, and I'm setting up a little mobile studio up here, and I'm trying to do as much writing and recording as I can, just to try to keep myself creative and keep from going crazy.
Yeah. Well, you called the last Drive-By Truckers album The Unraveling, and it features songs like Armageddon's Back in Town and 21st Century USA. Is it?
Yeah, we've become the Nostradamus of whatever genre we are, you know.
Is it fair to say that you and Cooley were already in a slightly apocalyptic mood before the lockdown set in?
I've definitely been in a pretty apocalyptic mood for the last several years, and we put out American Band right before the election, and in 2016, and then. You know, saw like the worst aspects of that record come true right before our eyes. And then, you know, we kind of took our time writing and doing this last record. And then it came out, and, you know, it's called The Unraveling, and then this all happened. So I think we're going to call the next record Free Healthcare and Blowjobs. and hope for the best, you know?
Right, sure. Like, you guys seem to be prognosticating a little bit, so you might as well hope for some good stuff, right?
Yeah, really. I'm kind of over the gloom and doom, that's for sure.
Well, so you know, American Band was a topical record, and so is this new one. You know, you guys have kind of taken a lot of stuff head on, white supremacy, gun violence. You know, it's kind of everything that people are thinking about is kind of weaved into these last couple of records.
For sure.
But I wonder how often did you hear from fans who were upset about that or pissed off about that?
You know, online, you get a lot of that. I mean, whenever, you know, there'd be an announcement about the new record or whatever, you know, Facebook would blow up with, you know, all these, you know, dickwads saying, you know, oh, congratulations, you've run off half of your fan base. And, you know, used to be good back when Jason Isbell was in the band. You know?
Because he's Jason Isbell, a noted conservative, obviously.
Right. Yeah, like he's been sitting this all out. I mean, he's shaking shit up as much as anybody out there. And doing, you know, beautiful work in the process. So you know, on if you follow that shit, then you'd think it was really bad. But I mean, that hasn't really been the vibe out there, you know, out in the world at all. I mean, our shows have been, you know, really, I think, well received and well attended. You know, this tour that we just had to postpone and everything was, I mean, you know, mostly sold out dates and some really, you know, great rooms and was really, you know, was really doing well. And the first leg of the tour, which we got under us before all of this happened, went exceptionally well. And so you know, it's just, it's what it is. I mean, there's no shortage of people who, you know, want to hear this. And I think hopefully it makes them feel less alone with what they're feeling about all of this shit going on.
I think that one of my favorite things about Drive-By Truckers is that, you know, on the records, especially the last couple ones, but really stretching all the way through the band's history, you guys don't shy away from the ugliness that is, you know, very present and very palpable in our country. I've thought a lot about how I think a lot of people who have their hearts in the right place have been wondering, how do we move forward after all of this? And I think about how your guys' records have been willing to confront some things that not everybody is always willing to confront. But it does feel to me like that's probably the most necessary step in terms of, we want to figure something out that's maybe a more dignified way for people to live in this country. But in order to do that, we are going to have to address some stuff head on. Do you feel like that's felt like a mandate for the Drive-By Truckers for a while now?
I mean, I think so. I think it kind of always has been. It's just, you know, we've kind of changed the way we present it, maybe, and the way we've done some things about it. And our, you know, as we, you know, when we started, we were a regional band. We were, you know, we had never really toured outside of, you know, a very small area. And so we wrote about what we knew about. And as we spent more and more time in more and more places, you know, I think our writing has kind of, the scope of what we're talking about, singing about, has gotten wider and deeper and broader and shit. But, you know, but it's kind of always been that thing. I mean, I felt like growing up where we did, you know, Cooley and I grew up in North Alabama, and growing up there, you know, I kind of always really rebelled against the whitewashing of our history. The, you know, everything's fine. It's like, well, everything really hasn't been fine, you know, and the only way we're going to heal from this is to face it head on and confront it and, you know, maybe shine a light on some of those dark corners where the roaches and the spiders live, you know, and where the, you know, and of course, you know, we come to realize that, you know, white supremacy isn't just an Alabama thing, you know.
So, right. Yeah.
And unfortunately, it isn't just something buried in the past either. And so, so you know, that's a sad part of it all. But that's kind of always been what we've, you know, what we've dealt with and what we've written about. It's just a bigger, it's on a bigger scope now.
Yeah. You guys have, you know, I think that there's maybe a tendency, not among everybody, but certainly among some people, right, to pretend that we can relegate certain terrible aspects of our history to the South.
Right.
You know, people in the North, I mean, I'm here in the Southwest, so it's not like we have a lot of moral high ground when it comes to, you know, history or anything. But the truth is that most places in America don't have that moral high ground, but they do like to sort of pretend they do. I feel like,
well, it's always great. It's always great to cast the villain in the movie, in that kind of movie, as a redneck, you know, to have the redneck sheriff, you know, maybe missing even a few teeth, you know, and have that be the villain character. And because it just plays so well cinematically that way. But, you know, the truth is way more complex. And, you know, Boston during the 70s, during the busing situation, was about as nasty a racial, you know, situation as anything you'll find anywhere. And that's just, you know, just one of many, many examples. You know, you can take Chicago and you know, where they, you know, the strategic idea of where they put the interstates in order to divide the city between the black neighborhoods and the white neighborhoods. I mean, it goes on and on throughout our country.
That's right. That's right. And it's not relegated to just one region or just one state or just one, you know, one anything. It's kind of all woven throughout the history of our country.
And I don't say any of that cutting the South any slack. I mean, I'm not happy to say that. I wish it was just a Southern problem. So then at least it'd be easier to move away from it or to get away from it. But I mean, I moved to Portland, Oregon, which is, you know, considered, you know, Portlandia or whatever, you know, and it's considered one of the most, you know, liberal cities in America and all of that. And, you know, you drive 5 miles outside the city limits and you can just as easily be in Alabama, except the trees and the scenery looks a little different. But I mean, culturally, it's not that different at all. But you get rural Oregon, you know, has some scary redneck shit.
Yeah. But I do think that there's something really fascinating and interesting about the fact that your band has made the difficult decision, I think, to address that stuff head on and to really devote a significant amount of space on your records to, you know, condemning that stuff and fighting some of the perceptions and I think really I think breaking down some of the walls that people allow themselves to erect in order to avoid having to think about that bad history. But I have to imagine that there have been times where it gets just like you alluded to it earlier. You know, you'd probably like to write a record about how much better things are than they used to be. But at the present, it doesn't seem like you've been presented that chance right now.
Yeah, no, not right now. You know, I watch as much as I can. I try to keep up as much as I can with things that are going on, but at the same time, you know, watching these daily press briefings or, you know, or whatever they're called that, you know, they're having right now about the virus stuff and some of just the idiotic and horrific things that get said, you know, it's pretty terrifying, you know, especially when we're at a moment of crisis. We should be rising above. I mean, even as much as I may have disagreed with and disliked, you know, Bush during the 9/11 era, by God, he went out there and stood in the rubble and tried to be a uniter, you know, at least for a moment. And we don't have any of that. And it's really, really sad and scary to me.
There's a song on the new record called Thoughts and Prayers where you get into the anti-science worldview a little bit in terms of, well, I guess in terms of a flat earth theorist, you know,
right.
who finds himself confronted with the curve of the earth, you know, right before he crashes. I don't know if that was written specifically about the guy out in
it was yeah. You know, he had a crash landing a couple of years before, you know, I know he recently was killed in his attempt to prove the world is flat or whatever, but before that he had a crash landing right about the time that I wrote that song. It had just kind of been a news story and somehow he ended up in the bridge of that song. It seemed to make sense to me, you know, at a time when, you know, people are using thoughts and prayers as an excuse for inaction, you know, which, you know, by the way, you know, for the record, I don't have any issue with thoughts and prayers. You know, I think if you get comfort from praying or thinking, you know,
sure.
I think it's a great thing. You know, my issue in the song is with people using that as an excuse for inaction, like so many of the politicians are doing. And I think that is a very unchristian thing to do, to put it bluntly.
Yeah. Do you feel like that anti-science sort of thing? You know, I find myself struggling with it. I come from a background of growing up, you know, in the church and growing up with faith, and I do believe that you know the people's individual faiths can really help them embrace their fellow human, you know, if that's the kind of faith you cultivate. But
right,
that anti-science thing, that sort of denial of what we understand about the universe and about the world and about the way, let's say, viruses work. Do you feel like that's sort of rearing its head as well right now in terms of the news?
Oh, sure. And you know, it's all just another attempt at creating the other, this other, you know, the Chinese virus. You know, it's this virus that came from these other people. And, it was Mexicans, you know, they're going to sneak across the border and rape your women. You know, the Chinese are going to sneak across the border with their virus. You know, it's all this other design to, you know, keep the ignorant fired up and militant and to stigmatize anybody that's thinking, because if you really are thinking and learning and educating yourself, you know that that's not the truth and that's not the way things are. You know that the world, you know, if you can lift above the little neighborhood you're in, you can see that the world is not flat.
Yeah. I think a lot about how that is used to keep people divided.
Essentially
to provide an enemy that is, maybe keeps you distracted from the people who are really screwing you over to some degree.
Oh, yeah. Damn straight.
Yeah.
You know, while they're picking your pockets while they're keeping you distracted with, you know, bathroom laws or whatever, they're picking your pockets clean, you know, and they're, you know, giving, you know, major tax breaks and you know, welfare to huge conglomerate corporations, you know, and they're keeping people so scared that, you know, some minority is going to get a little slice of the pie that you don't realize that, you know, the pie is being served to the billionaires.
I guess I wonder, you know, you as a songwriter, you have written songs that cut through the noise and really do connect to people's sense of humanity. How do we try to communicate in these times, man? How do we reach people on the other line? You know, let's say the other side of the aisle or whatever. Let's say that you and I are stereotypical good liberals or whatever bullshit you might want to, you know, use to describe two white guys who are sitting on the phone talking about the problems of the world.
Right.
How do we cut through it? You know, in your
experience. I don't know. I mean, I'm open to, you know, I try to be a communicator. I mean, that's what I feel like that's a big part of what my job is. You know, I hate it when my songs are misunderstood because I feel like that means I did a bad job. I feel like, oh man, I didn't express myself well enough to where they misunderstood what I meant here, so I obviously must have done something wrong in the writing of the song. And because I really try, without being just overly obvious, I try to be as clear as I can, you know, with you know, mixed results, because sometimes it works better than others. But you know, I'd like to think I can have a. I mean, I've had friends all my life, all across the political spectrum, all across religious spectrums. I've got pretty diverse bunch of friends, you know, from all walks of life. And our fan base has always skewed that way to some extent too. But things have gotten so polarized that it's become harder and harder to maintain some of that. You know, I can have a really intelligent conversation, I think, with somebody who is a conservative, even though I may not be that conservative in my viewpoints. I can have a very straightforward conversation, not even a heated one, with a conservative, but I can't with a racist. You know, when it starts going there, or it starts just getting into, you know, when the response starts being, you know, oh, you're just a communist, you want to give away all your money and blah blah blah, and it's going to be Venezuela. You know, I've had people say, oh, you just should move to Venezuela. You know, it's like, what? Where did that fucking come from? You know, it's like, sure. It's like, you know, I can't really have a conversation. There's a point where you just kind of have to shut that down and. You know, hope for the best with the next person that you're interacting with. But so I don't know. And you know, and for the record, as far as what's going on in the you know, with the Republican Party right now, it has nothing to do with conservatism. I mean, there is very little conservative as far as the traditional definitions of conservatism. There is very little of that anywhere in the modern day Republican Party. And so, you know, so they can spare me that bullshit, too, because and I personally lament. You know, I don't want to see the death of the two-party system unless we were to have just more parties. But I don't want to. You know, I think it's good to have people on the other side of the aisle who are trying to balance the books and you know, maybe keep us bleeding-hearted liberals from giving away everything. I see the fundamental need for that in a democratic society, and but that's not what we've got now. And right. You know, we do not have Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan, you know debating heatedly, you know, in public, and then going out and having dinner together. That is not existing anymore, and I lament that. I think it's really bad for us as a society and as a country.
Well, before I get into asking you a little bit, a slight change of topic, but talking about maybe what you've been listening to and reading and watching culturally as we are dealing with this pandemic. You did mention hiding out up in the attic and working on stuff. Have you been writing songs already about what's going on?
Well, I've got one. I wrote one about a week ago called Quarantine Together. And it's and actually that's one of my short-term projects. My goal is to try to get it out there to the rest of the band by the end of the week, or by the middle of next week. I'm setting up my studio up in my office, my attic, and I'm wanting to get like a good solid basic track of me playing it on guitar and singing it, and then send it to the rest of the band members and have them with their home stuff, you know, add their parts, and then send it to David Parby, who will mix it. And my goal would be to put it out as a single sooner as opposed to later. That's what I really love to see happen. And so that's kind of the immediate short-term goal. On a little longer thing, I've worked on probably 5 songs, I guess, in the last 2 weeks, and some of which are like older songs that I had worked on at various times and set aside as like unfinished to maybe hopefully readdress. So I figure, well, maybe now's a good time to readdress that and figure out if I can figure out a way to make, you know, there might be some really aspect of a song I really like, but obviously it's not quite working. So try to fix it and make it into something I'm proud of. And then I'd like to do like some solo recording, whether it ever comes out or sees the light of day, or if it just becomes demos for the next time I do a solo record or whatever. And maybe, you know, hopefully demo some more songs for the next Trucker record too. So that's what I'm trying to do on the creative end.
Did it take some getting comfortable with the idea of being, you know, a quote unquote topical songwriter?
It's been a process for sure.
Sure.
I mean, there's always been a political aspect of my songwriting. I mean, Adam's House Cat, my band in the 80s, you know, we had political songs, and we had a song in 1988 about George Bush Sr. when he was running for president, and it was inspired by the Doonesbury comic they were doing of him at the time where he was invisible. It was called The Invisible Man. And you know, so there, you know, I've always dabbled in it for a long time. You know, I mean, I was that weird kid that came home from school in, you know, elementary school and watched the Watergate hearings. So I've always had that in me, and I've always been very, very interested, even to the point of maybe even obsessed about politics. I'm not really into sports, so that was always kind of the thing that I followed, like some people would follow their football team or whatever. And even at a young age, it's like, you know, these are the people that are controlling our lives, so I want to understand what they mean and what they're talking about and where they're coming from and, you know, who I agree with and who I disagree with and why and all of that. So I've kind of always been that way. But you know, there was a point in the songwriting where it definitely started taking a bigger, you know, I guess, and particularly when we started doing American Band, just because, you know, so much of that was written right as, like, in the Trayvon Martin, you know, when that had just happened, and the riot, you know, Ferguson, and all of that was just so immediate and so, you know, so prevalent in our minds at the time. And, you know, having grown up in Alabama during the, you know, immediate post-civil rights era and seeing firsthand the damage done, it was like, it just was really heartbreaking for me to see the whole country kind of erupting that way. You know, obviously it had been happening all along, but it was kind of an awakening, you know, in my white privileged life, to just how bad it still was, and how widespread, so, you know, there's been a lot of that.
Well, so when you're not writing songs and reflecting on the world around you, what have you been listening to and watching and reading lately? What's been keeping you sane in this weird time?
Well, I've been listening to Lily Hyatt's new record over and over. I love her. I love her songwriting and think she's just a fantastic artist. They sent me a copy of her album a couple weeks before it came out, and I got it in the mail basically the day I flew home from our aborted tour. And it's one of those records that puts you kind of in a good mood. It's also one of those records I can play loud while we're all eating breakfast, and no one's going to complain about it in the family. It's one of the one of the rare ones that gets the 4 out of 4 approval. So that's gotten a lot of heavy play. I've been really digging this. I guess they're a new band. They were new to me anyway. Porridge Radio. I've been loving that record.
And I don't know that one yet.
And they're from England. The review I read that made me first check it out, It said something about PJ Harvey in the review, and I was like, oh, sold.
Sure, sure.
And because I'm a huge fan of hers, and I can see a little, can definitely hear a little PJ Harvey, a little early Pretenders in it, maybe a little of the more surly side of Courtney Barnett in it too, but it's just, man, killer hooks, killer songs, and it rocks. And been listening to a lot of Clash, a lot of Big Star, those Big Star reissues that recently came out, and the King Cruel record, and the Gil Scott Heron, We're New Again, the reimagining.
McKay McRaven.
Oh my God, that's just, okay. I've about worn that out. I've played it so much, So really all of that, and then last night, you know, or the night before last, that Dylan song dropped. At one point yesterday, my wife was painting our hallway right by our kitchen, and we just started playing it. We just put it on a repeat loop and just let it play for about an hour and a half straight. And while we were doing other things and just kind of letting it wash over us and drift through. And what a remarkable piece of work. And just the timing of putting it out at this exact moment and all of that is just pretty amazing. And
can you imagine recording that and just sitting on it?
I mean, I've been trying to wrap my head around all of that. You know, it's like Rebecca and I were talking last night while we were listening to it. It's like, I mean, it sounds like he was just sitting at the piano, and it just, you know, I mean, I wonder how much of it was written down and how much of it was just, you know, I mean, I'm assuming that's him playing piano. You know, I'm wondering if the strings are there with him at the time. I mean, I don't know. I'd love to know more about the creation about it, you know, if we ever will, you know, and how long he sat on it. And, you know, I mean, obviously the timing, you know, putting out something that takes up 17 minutes in an era when our, you know, that if anything good comes out of all of this, I think maybe a certain reset in our attention spans might be a really healthy thing for us as a society. And, you know, I can't imagine that coming out 6 months ago and not just being basically, you know, made fun of and faced with a lot of derision. But now sure. All of a sudden it comes out and people have a chance to actually let it play and kind of let it sink in. And it really just nailed kind of the melancholia of where we're at right now. It's such an elegy. And I'm pretty blown away with it. I've been a fan of Old Man Dylan anyway. I've loved most of the later Dylan records a whole lot, and from Time Out of Mind onward. And but to me, it's a pretty remarkable piece of work.
Yeah, I completely agree.
And well, we've been trying to watch movies. Of course, you know, we watched Tiger King, like I think everybody else in America. but we've also been trying to watch a lot of movies. And my birthday was the other day, and so I got to pick what movie I would subject the kids to, you know. And we all watched Miller's Crossing, which has always been a favorite, and my kids had never seen it. And it got a 4 out of 4 approval. But and then last night, Rebecca and I, after we finished everything else of the night, we sat up and watched There Will Be Blood, which I haven't seen in several years and might be my favorite movie so far this century. And it was just, it really hit the mood right on the head last night watching that. I think we're going to watch Chinatown in the next couple of nights too.
Well, those are all great choices, and I'm sure that they are providing both stuff to think about and maybe a little bit of comfort as well. But right. Madison, we want to thank you for taking the time to talk with us about this stuff and to talk about this last record and everything you're going through. It's really great to hear from you.
Well, thanks so much for talking to me and having me and for everything y'all are doing. And also, this all started up. I sent an email to Justin thanking him for posting that John Martin Rock Palace show last week. And,
oh, yeah.
Good God, I've so enjoyed watching that. I love John Martin, and he's sort of a nearly forgotten, you know, he doesn't get that much attention. And so seeing that, and I told Justin, I saw him that year. I saw him in 78, opening for Eric Clapton on the Slowhand tour, which was actually Clapton was pretty terrible. It was a pretty awful show, but John Martin was amazing. And I'd never heard of him. Until I saw him, I was in, you know, eighth grade. But it was amazing. And, so, seeing that footage from that same year was really, really meant a lot to me, and I've enjoyed watching that. And you know, y'all always do cool shit, and so I'll really appreciate it. I'm a big fan.
Well, the feeling is absolutely mutual, and I appreciate you taking the time. And stay safe, and we'll talk soon. Okay, when this is all over.
All right, take care. Hopefully, I'll see you in L.A. This summer.
I hope so.
All right.
Thanks so much.
Okay. And we're back. Jason Woodbury with Patterson Hood here on the Transmissions Podcast. Patterson, big supporter of Aquarium Drunkard over the years, probably one of our most interviewed artists. So it was great having Jason connect with him.
We want to take this opportunity to encourage you to head over to patreon.com/aquariumdrunkard. If you're interested in what you're doing, if you like these podcasts, if you like the radio show, the interviews, the mixes, everything that we feature on the site, that is the absolute best way to help us keep doing it, is to head over to the Patreon and throw us a little bit of bread and let people know that you are interested in supporting a fully independent online music publication. It's 2020, and aside from a TV show, which you know, you're kind of working on anyway, Justin, we're pretty much serving you content in every available format. So if you can hop on and help Patreon, help us support what we're doing at Patreon, that would be excellent. And we want to take this opportunity to encourage you to head over to Radio Free Aquarium Drunkard as well. You can access that through iTunes. You can hook your Sonos up. You can listen all day and all night. My show is going to premiere on Wednesday night at 8 p.m., and there's all sorts of other great stuff, all sorts of stuff in the works. If you want to find out what we're up to, the best way to do so is just follow Aquarium Drunkard on all available social media. And while you're doing that, rate and review this podcast. Tell your friends to subscribe, and we will be back next week with more quarantine conversations here on the Transmissions Podcast. Thanks so much.
Stay safe, stay clean.
Put your hand in it. Put your